A ray of October sun shone through the greenish glass in the mullioned window and illuminated the king's face. Seated before him, sketching his familiar features, Susanna reflected on how he had put on weight and age these past 3 years. She knew his face and form better than most, having taken his likeness several times in the past 16 years. It grieved her to see the sagging of that noble profile, the heavy jowls, the wreck of his athletic body, which was now encased in fat. At first she had been awestruck having the king as a sitter, but over the years she had relaxed into an easy, pleasant relationship with him. It went no further. The natural distance of monarch and subject lay between them, and he had never given any sign that he had found her homely Flemish features attractive. It was better that way. She did not need complications in her professional life.
"Mistress Gilman, I want this miniature to be small, 2 inches in height at most," the king said.
"Would your grace like it on vellum or ivory?" she asked.
"Vellum," he told her. "I intend to have it mounted in a locket. Master Holbein is designing one."
His painter, Master Holbein, was a genius, and so he ought to be, for her brother Lucas had tutored him. Susanna laid down her black chalk. "I have finished, sir. Would you like to see it?" She took the sketch over to his chair, hoping the drawing was not too overtly flattering. She could not have borne to paint the king with brutal realism. Art should be a beautiful thing. It should raise the spirits and please the senses.
"Excellent, as usual," Henry said admiringly. "It will be a gift for my bride."
It was just 3 days since the announcement of his coming marriage to the Princess of Cleef, and the court was still talking about it. Susanna was pleased for him. He had grieved terribly for the loss of Queen Jane 2 years ago. Susanna had been a gentlewoman to his last wife, and sincerely hoped she would not be required to take up the same post in the new queen's household. She had had to give up her art, and all it meant to her, for painters were artisans, equal in the minds of courtiers to merchants and master craftsmen, and it would not have done for a gentlewoman to the queen to have earned her own living. She had been sorry for Jane Seymour's death in childbed, but relieved to be able to return to the first of her great passions in life. It had offered a panacea for her own grief at the death of her husband earlier that year, and stopped her feeling cast adrift after being anchor to John Parker for 12 years. She had done well for herself, people said. John had been keeper of the Palace of Westminster, yeoman of the king's crossbows, and yeoman of the king's robes. Life had been good. She had divided her time between the court and her husband's houses at Fulham and King's Langley. He had even provided her with her own workshops, although she had continued to spend time in her father's atelier at court, where there were always too many commissions to be filled, and an extra pair of gifted hands was greatly appreciated. The other great passion in her life was waiting downstairs for the king's sitting to end. He was the other reason why she did not want to return to the arid life of a royal gentlewoman, constrained always to subsume her own desires in social conventions, and live vicariously through her mistress. She wanted to spend her free time with John Gilman. She had expected His Majesty to rise from his chair and leave, but to her surprise, he stayed there, seeming unusually hesitant.
"I can trust you, Mistress Gilman, can I not?" he said at length.
"Of course, sir," she assured him, surprised.
"And you are a married woman, so I can talk freely to you?"
"Yes, sir." She was wondering what this was all about.
"There are certain matters that are better handled by ladies than by ministers or ambassadors," he said, his fair cheeks slightly flushed. "Sit down, I pray you."
Susanna sat on the stool, smoothing her paint-stained apron over her dove-grey skirts, completely baffled.
"The Princess of Cleves looks charming in Holbein's portrait," the king said, "and all the reports I have received praise her virtues and her demeanour. But I need to know more, to nourish love, if you take my meaning. I need to know who her friends are, and if..." He paused, seeming to be struggling for words. "I have been told by my envoys that some years ago she was away from court for many months, suffering from a mysterious illness. I say mysterious because no one seems to know what it was, and I suspect it was some woman's ailment. And if that was the case, I need to know if it had any effect on her ability to bear children. That is where you can help."
Susanna didn't like the way this was going.
"I, sir?" "Yes, you speak her language. You can also teach her English, and about English customs. Doing that, you would spend hours together, of necessity. It would be easy to gain her confidence."
Susanna's heart had sunk.
"Does your grace mean for me to do this when the Queen arrives in England?"
The King shook his head.
"No, Mr. Skillman. I want you to go to Cleves, be her mentor, and discover the things I need to know before I marry her."
Susanna could not hide her dismay.
"Your grace, I have been married but 2 weeks. I had not looked to leave my husband alone so soon.
And I do not want to cross the sea again." She had never forgotten the violent tempest that had blown her and her family to England when she was 19. The King smiled at her.
"He may go with you, for I think you will be there for some weeks," he said. "I will pay his passage and expenses, and £40 to equip yourself."
She gasped. It was more than she earned in 3 years.
"Oh, your grace, that is more than generous."
All the while she was screwing up her apron in her distress. She had no excuses left now.
"It is a measure of my trust in you," the King said.